Hello, my name is Jody Lee Mott, and welcome to Dream Gardens, where we talk up the kids' books we love. Richard Adams, the author of Watership Down, died on December 27th last year at the age of 96. He always insisted that his great novel was never meant to be read as an allegory, but was simply a story about a group of rabbits trying to find a home. In that spirit, I thought the best tribute to him would be to simply read a selection from his novel, in which he writes about the moonlight on the downs, and let the words speak for themselves. The full moon, well risen in a cloudless eastern sky, covered the high solitude with its light. We are not conscious of daylight as that which displaces darkness. Daylight, even when the sun is clear of clouds, seems to us simply the natural condition of the earth and air. When we think of the downs, we think of the downs in daylight, as we think of a rabbit with its fur on. Stubbs may have envisaged the skeleton inside the horse, but most of us do not. We do not usually envisage the downs without daylight, even though the light is not part of the down itself, as the hide is part of the horse itself. We take daylight for granted. But moonlight is another matter. It is inconstant. The full moon wanes and returns again. Clouds may obscure it to an extent to which they cannot obscure daylight. Water is necessary to us, but waterfall is not. Where it is to be found is in something extra, a beautiful ornament. We need daylight, and to that extent it is utilitarian, but moonlight we do not need. When it comes, it serves no necessity. It transforms. It falls upon the banks and the grass, separating one long blade from another, turning a drift of brown frosted leaves from a single heap to innumerable flashing fragments, or glimmering lengthways along wet twigs as though light itself were ductile. Its long beams pour, white and sharp, between the trunks of trees, their clarity fading as they recede into the powdery, misty distance of beech woods at night. In moonlight, 2 acres of coarse, bent grass, undulant and ankle-deep, tumbled and rough as a horse's mane, appear like a bay of waves, all shadowy troughs and hollows. The growth is so thick and matted that the wind does not move it, but it is the moonlight that seems to confer stillness upon it. We do not take moonlight for granted. It is like snow or like the dew on a July morning. It does not reveal, but changes what it covers. And its low intensity, so much lower than that of daylight, makes us conscious that it is something added to the down, to give it, for only a little time, a singular and marvelous quality that we should admire while we can, for soon it will be gone again. My guest today is Priya Chaya, a historian and author of the picture book Heart of the River. Her website is called Priya Chaya, A Certain Point of View, which can be found at priyachaya.com. That's PRIYACHHAYA.com. And her blog, This Is What Comes Next, can be found at thisiswhatcomesnext.com. Thank you for joining me today, Priya.
Thanks for having me.
Now, I mentioned you wrote a book called Heart of the River. Can you tell us a little bit about what that's about and what inspired you to write it?
Sure. So The Heart of the River is about a little girl named Arya who's an explorer. And one day she goes on an adventure and ends up helping someone along the way to get to her goal. And she's a storyteller. And so she's always looking for objects of wonder to tell her story from those objects. And I was sort of inspired to write it because my older sister told me she was having her first child, and I'm a writer, and I wanted to give her something really special, and so I ended up writing the story for her, and decided that it was good enough to maybe try and get someone to help me illustrate and self-publish. And so I'm really happy with the way it turned out. My niece loves it, which for me is amazing. Like, I'll sit down and talk to her about it, and she'll tell me the story in her own words, and that's pretty much what inspired me to write it.
Now, the book you chose is called Number the Stars by Lois Lowry, originally published in 1989 by Houghton Mifflin. And what can you tell the readers about, who might be unfamiliar with this book, what it's about?
So this is a story about a young girl named Anne-Marie in Denmark. And it sort of tells the story of the Holocaust, but in a way that's accessible for young readers, and explains how Nazi Germany sort of restricted rights, and then how they sought to save some Jewish people from Hitler's regime and the camps. And it's really great at not getting into too much detail, because it's a difficult subject. Some of the details are harder for younger readers to handle, but gives just enough so you get a sense of what the situation was in that period of time.
And what was it about this particular book that really drew you to it, that made it special for you?
I am a historian, and so one of the things that drew me to this book was, I'm not sure if I realized it as a young child how much of an impact it had on me, but as an adult, I do know that it was sort of my first entree into the idea that history isn't all beautiful and perfect, and that not everything is shiny and nice, and that we've had to come a long way from dealing with certain issues, and that it takes individual people to make a difference and individual people to make a change. And as an adult, as a historian, it's something that I see every day around me, even today. And I just find that this book is really great at teaching those lessons and explaining how you have to stand up to things when you see that they're wrong in your own way. And that's really what attracted me to this book.
Now, this book is set in Denmark. It's not usually a country we associate with World War II or the Holocaust, and it tells us a story we may not be familiar with. What do you think the value of telling these sort of lesser, well-known stories to give a historical perspective?
I think the value of telling these lesser, well-known stories is to show that history doesn't happen in isolation. So while we might get the story of the Holocaust and stuff in Germany or Austria more often, the understanding that World War II and the situations related to World War II happened all over Europe is really important, because just to know that it was a bigger thing happening in that time and not just isolated to one country. And I think that goes for history in general, is that you can often get a story of one period of history from one perspective, but being able to learn about that same period from different people is really important to get basically the full range of history for all classes, all races, and all perspectives.
The world of this novel is really seen through the eyes of one young girl, Anne Marie. And for her, it's a very personal story. It's about her friend Ellen and Ellen's family, and how the events of the world around kind of affect them. For Anne Marie, it's a very personal story rather than a big historical drama.
Yeah. So again, I'm going to go back to sort of my experience as a historian. I'm something you would call a public historian, which means that I think a lot about history out in the public and how individuals relate to it personally, and not just through the written word. And so often in school, students learn about the past through books and things, but they don't really have that personal touchstone. And I think what helps with this, but the reason this book is so effective, is because it does make it about one person and her friend, and not about like groups of people, which helps personalize it a little bit more.
Throughout the book, adults are always trying to keep things secret from Anne Marie and Ellen, and for their own protection is what they're told. It never really works for very long. The secrets always manage to find their way out. And I was just sort of thinking, is this something adults always get wrong about kids, of trying to keep things secret?
That's a difficult question. I do think on some subjects, waiting till kids are of a certain age to explain things to them is one angle to go for. But I do think that especially when big things happen, like the issues addressed in this book, being as honest you can with the kids about what's going on is really important. So they're not blindsided, or they understand what's going on in the world in a way that they can in a way that doesn't make it seem like they're hiding, because it's partially like a trust issue, right? Is that some adults don't think that kids are mature enough to handle things, when in fact they actually are a lot more mature than they really are. And I know this book deals with 1943, but even today, kids understand a lot more about what's going on in the world than we ever give them credit for. And I think being honest about that, those situations with those kids, is really, really important. Because if you don't talk to them about them, they can make their own judgments that often might not be with the full breadth of information that they should have.
Yeah, I want to talk about another character in the book, Peter. He's a character we don't really see a lot of in the book, but his presence, it looms very big throughout the book. And I'm just wondering, from your own perspective, what is it about Peter that makes him such a memorable and important character in the book, even though he doesn't show up a lot?
Well, I think for Anne Marie, sort of twofold, right? So Peter's this guy that was engaged to her sister. I think you say it as Liesl was her name, her sister who died 2 weeks before their wedding. And there's some mysterious circumstances around that, which we learn about later, where her sister was actually part of the resistance with Peter. And I think that he's basically that touchstone to that sister she no longer has. But at the same time, I think as we progress through the story, Peter becomes sort of the symbol for bravery for Anne Marie, where he's actively doing something to help protect these people in our lives, the Rosens and the other Jewish families that they're trying to protect. And I think he's really important in that way too, because he represents the resistance in Denmark in a way that we don't get from any of the other characters.
We've talked a lot of, this is a historical novel, takes place, you know, during that a time of World War II. You know, for a lot of younger readers, that's really ancient history to them. But is there something for the young readers when they read this book, apart from it being a historical novel, that they could, a message that they could take and apply to their own lives today?
Yeah, I think very much so. It's about speaking up when you see someone bullied or someone treated differently because of how they look or how they dress or how they, or where they come from. I think recognizing that we all come from different places is very important. And that I think this book gives you on a very more serious level, like an example of where you should maybe not necessarily speak up, but you should defend those people if they're being mistreated. So in that way, I think the lessons it gives for like the everyday is really important. So it's not just about like people who might be taken to concentration camps, but people who might be mistreated in other ways.
In the book, there's an afterword, Los Lowry writes, which it's definitely worth reading. And in it, she points out, you know, there are different parts of the book that are based on facts that she gathered. And some of them, of course, is fictionalized, like the character of Anne Marie and Ellen. Now, the fact that she wrote this afterword and sort of pointed these things out for the reader, is there a particular responsibility for writers of historical fiction to make clear, you know, to the readers, this is the real history of the book? Or is it really, or you think it should be up to the reader to try to search these things out for themselves and find out what's going on?
I think especially for young readers, it's really important to point out what's real and what's not, just to show that in the act of writing historical fiction, you're loosely basing a story within a real time period and real situations that happen to real people, but that the people they might be reading about aren't real in and of themselves. And I think the thing I like about the afterword is the quote she gives from the individual that Peter was based on. It's actually very beautiful writing that the quote in itself talks about what we were just discussing about humanity. And I think in that sense, I think it's very important to be able to see like what's real and what's not. So then you can further put things in context. Okay, so the young man she's quoting is someone named Kim Malthy Brune, who was eventually captured and executed by the Nazis when he was only 21 years old. And the quote is this. So it's in a letter to his mother the night before he was put to death. "And I want you all to remember that you must not dream yourselves back to the times before the war, but the dream for you all, young and old, must be to create an ideal of human decency, and not a narrow-minded and prejudiced one. That is the great gift our country hungers for, something every little peasant boy can look forward to, and with pleasure feel he is a part of, something he can work and fight for." And then Lowry goes on to say, "Surely that gift, the gift of a world of human decency, is the one that all countries hunger for still." And it's really very much a beautiful sentiment and something that I think that those of us who know about the Holocaust and what happened hope for every day, that we have come past that time and that we are able to speak up louder than we were at that time in the 40s against situations like this that are still happening in some ways across the country, across the world.
Is there any other passage from the book that you'd like to share?
Yeah, so there's a section at the end of chapter 11 where the Rosens are about to be taken to the boat to be transported out of Denmark. And they're leaving the house, and Mr. Rosen stumbles and he's helped up, and her mom says something about that, like, he didn't seem to be hurt, but maybe just his pride. And so this is a section where Anne-Marie talks about the word pride. It was an odd word, pride. Anne-Marie looked at the Rosen sitting there wearing the misshapen, ill-fitting clothing, holding ragged blankets folded in their arms, their faces drawn and tired. She remembered the earlier, happier times. Mrs. Rosen, her hair neatly combed and covered, lighting the Sabbath candles, saying the ancient prayer, and Mr. Rosen, sitting in the big chair in the dreams of theater, had been left behind in Copenhagen. They had nothing without them now. There was only the clothing of unknown people for warmth, the food from Henrik's farm for survival, and the dark path ahead through the woods to freedom. Anne-Marie realized, though she had not really been told, that Uncle Henrik was going to take them in his boat across the sea to Sweden. She knew how frightened Mrs. Rosen was of the sea, its width, its depth, its cold. She knew how frightened Ellen was of the soldiers, with their guns and boots, who were certainly looking for them. And she knew how frightened they all must be of the future. But their shoulders were as straight as they had been in the past, in the classroom, on the stage, at the Sabbath table. So there were other sources, too, of pride, and they had not left everything behind. And I think the thing I really like about this passage is about how she describes the people who should be beaten and should be frightened, but yet they know who they are without the tangibles and the place and the space, and that they have each other, and that pride is about more than just these tangible things that you have from where you live and things like that. And I just really liked how Anne-Marie was the one who made that observation, and that she wasn't told that these people weren't beaten, that they did have a future and they did have something to look forward to. And I think I really did like that passage for that reason.
I just have one last question for you. Are there other either historical novels or other even nonfiction books or other resources that you could refer them to for, like I said, those readers who find this book and want to find out more?
Yes, really the best resource in the United States, at least, is the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum, which is located here in Washington, D.C. But even if you can't physically get to D.C. to see the museum, their website is amazing. They've got great resources for students of all ages and also great people who, if you email them to ask them for help, will be happy to provide information if you're looking for more background of what happened in particular countries. It's a museum that is incredibly powerful and difficult to go through, but I think just like this book deals with a subject matter that I think we should never forget about.
Priya, thank you so much for joining me today and talking about this book.
No, thank you for having me. I'm really glad I got to talk about it. It's one of my favorites.
Thank you for joining me on Dream Gardens. The theme music, titled All Together, is provided courtesy of Purple Planet Music. You can visit them at www.purple-planet.com. Podcast cover art is provided by Creative Pro 180, courtesy of Fiverr, which can be found at www.fiverr.com. You can find out more about me at jleemott.com. That's jleemott.com. Or contact me at jodymott@gmail.com. Until next time, keep dreaming, keep growing, and keep reading.